America buried her 41st president the other day, George H.W. Bush. A man of the old school, a Navy pilot, diplomat, director of the CIA, an establishment wasp, a patrician. In death, his enemies put him on a horse, like El Cid, and rode the dead man out against Trump and their enemies. It was disgusting. President Bush was mocked for being prudent.
Alrighty.
Paper towel, Mr. President?
Not gonna do it. Not gonna do it. Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture, you know? What do you say we try that blower thing over there?
It's right over here, Mr. President.
It wouldn't be prudent became a laugh line. But it was his prudence that prevented the world from burning in those dangerous days after the fall of the nuclear-armed Soviet Union. The Soviets were desperate, afraid, losing power, and hideously dangerous. But I think more Americans know about Sully, President Bush's service dog, than they do about how he handled things and stopped the breaking of the world. And here in Chicago, in the mayoral campaign, Chicago politics is breaking. Jerry Joyce, son of Jeremiah, the Kaiser Sosa of Chicago politics under Rich Daley, has been given the top ballot position in the race for mayor. Young Joyce is challenging Bill Daley's petitions of candidacy. You don't have to imagine how angry the Daleys are now. I can hear them shrieking in rage from here. How much money did Jerry Joyce make under Daley's at City Hall with those airport contracts? And now they see gratitude coming at them. Jeff Carlin, Mr. Science and my good friend, and co-host and producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis is here. He's back at the studio, dropping in the great sound. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And you? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
What do you remember about the funeral of George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st president of the United States? He'd been shot down as a young pilot over the Pacific in World War II, a Texas oil man, congressman, diplomat, director of CIA, vice president, and president. He was at the beginning of the old Reagan coalition that began to break apart. And he was also a father, mourned by his family. And I can't forget watching his son, President George W. Bush, eulogize him and break down when he talked about the love his father had for his family.
So through our tears, let us know the blessings of knowing and loving you, a great and noble man, the best father a son or daughter could have. And in our grief, let us smile knowing that Dad is hugging Robin and holding Mom's hand again.
It was that moment, the son's voice breaking, his chest heaving, pulling himself together and continuing, that'll be difficult to forget. And so will the memory of former Senator Robert Dole, the Kansas Republican, in his wheelchair, standing up, being helped up to stand and salute President's casket the day before. Dole was a veteran of World War II. His right arm was ruined in battle. And these two men, Bush and Dole, were part of that last great generation of leaders that we had in this country long ago. There's another thing, though, that I can't get out of my mind. And it's the way his critics and politics and the media had spent so many years ripping him, calling him a colossal wimp. Remember the wimp factor? A cold, bloodless preppy. A man who couldn't feel our pain. An establishment patrician so out of touch that he didn't know about grocery store scanners. That was a fake story, by the way, but it had legs. Kind of like so many of the fake stories that have come out. So he was vilified as a racist, a moron, and a fool again and again. They had one object in mind, putting the indecent Bill Clinton into the White House. And he defiled the White House, Clinton did, almost from the beginning, with the intern and the cigar in the Oval Office. There they were, talking about honor, talking about civility, mourning the loss of his kindness, with all those constant comparisons to Donald Trump, who is neither kind nor gentle. There's no way Trump is a gentleman. He's a junkyard dog elected to do a junkyard dog's business. But you know what? The thing that bothers me is they prop Bush up on a horse. Democrats and media, the people who ripped him, they did it as if he were El Cid at the Siege of Valencia from centuries ago. They tied him to his saddle so he could ride out sightless to shame and rout their enemies. What Bush did as President of the United States was resist the temptation to expand NATO when the Soviet Union fell. He engineered the reunification of Germany. He did not expand NATO and threaten the Soviets. He could have, but he didn't, because he knew what might happen. That's called prudence. That's called discipline and skill in statecraft. We don't remember him doing that, do we? We remember that dog, Sully. We remember the emotional things. But I'll never forget how they strapped him to his saddle and rode him out on the horse like El Cid. It was disgusting. By the way, at the Battle of Valencia in 1094, almost 1,000 years ago, Rodrigo of Bivar, the Cid, as he was called, one of the first knights of Christendom in battles with the Moors, had died. And from the epic of the Song of Cid, when it was midnight, they took the body of the Cid, fastened to the saddle as it was, and placed it upon his horse, Bavecchia, and fastened the saddle well. And the body sat so upright and well that it seemed as if he were alive. And it had on painted hose of black and white, so cunningly painted that no man who saw them would have thought but that they were greaves, unless he had laid his hand upon them. And they put on it a surcoat of green sendal, and had his arms blazoned thereon, and a helmet of parchment, which was cunningly painted that everyone might have believed it to be iron. And his shield was hung around his neck, and they placed the sword Tizona in his hand, and they raised his arm and fastened it up so subtly that it was a marvel to see how upright he held the sword. And the bishop Don Jeronimo went on one side of him, and the trusty Gil Diaz on the other, and he led the horse Bavecchia as the Cid had commanded him to do. And when all this made ready, they went out from Valencia at midnight through the gates of Roseros, which is toward Castile. Pedro Bermudez went first with the banner of the Cid, and with him 500 knights, and after these came the baggage, and the body of the Cid with 100 knights, all chosen men, and behind them Donna Ximena with her company, and 600 knights in the rear. Do you think that the people put Bush on his horse, rode him out to shame Trump and 61 million Trump voters with Bush's decency, as they treated him in life with contempt? Know that? I don't think they know about the Cid. I don't think they can even say the Cid's name without it burning in their mouth.
Rise, Cid, blessed the hour you were born. Blessed the moment you girded your sword. Christian and Saracen call you their lord. The army of heaven has sounded its horn, and Gabriel calls you to rise.
You know about Jeremiah Joyce, the Kaiser Sosa of politics in Chicago when Rich Daley was mayor for those 20 years? It was Joyce and Tim Degnan who served as Rich Daley's political brain, apart from his brothers, of course. They all made a great living. They didn't eat crumbs. Even when they left government. They made piles and piles of cash. Joyce, he had the airports, the vendors, the duty-free shops. You wanted something done at the airport? You had to call Jeremiah. And how much money is that? How much does that translate? Take out your wallet, look inside, and realize something. He didn't make that kind of money. He made a lot of money. And now his son, Jerry Jr., has the top spot on the ballot for mayor of Chicago and is challenging Bill Daley, the brother of Rich Daley, and is challenging Bill's petitions of candidacy. How angry are the Daleys? I can hear them shrieking from here. Being number one on the ballot is a major boost for our campaign to bring change to Chicago, Joyce's statement read in part. We hope our ballot position, number one actually, gives visibility to our ideas to make Chicago more affordable, safer, blah, 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 and a place where every child has access to quality education, blah, 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 blah. You know, Jerry, you got to come out and talk to reporters and get your message across and be vetted. Just running as the white Irish guy on the ballot might wreak havoc for Daley and Paul Vallis, but I don't know. Is it really a campaign? Meanwhile, Daley's freaking and upset. I'm here. Guys are calling me saying, man, you can't believe what he's saying about the Joyces. And that's how it goes in Chicago. The Chicago way is not like a game of Risk or Monopoly at home with your cousins during the Christmas holidays when you were a kid. There are no rules. There are no bankers. Everybody wants to be the banker. Everybody wants to get on the top spots, the top real estate, and squeeze the others. It is just so ridiculous and funny. It's part of Chicago. Now, look, Jamal Green, remember we had him on the show? We had him on Chicago Way, the young activist. Willie Wilson's trying to knock him out. Willie Wilson is challenging his petitions, and Jamal Green didn't like it. Jeff Carlin said that Jamal Green was very upset, and I'm sure he is. And then Willie Wilson's guy, his spokesman apparently, Ricky Hollywood Hendon, an advisor, stands up and says to Jamal Green, Jamal Green needs to fix his pacifier. Really? Fix your pacifier? Woo! We're in that petition challenge period. Once that's done and we know who's on the ballot and who's not, then the real campaign begins again. It's kind of like in a holding pattern right now. Sorry about the plane. Can Susana Mendoza withstand Tony Preckwinkle's challenge? Can Bill Daley withstand Jerry Joyce's challenge? I don't know, but can the Southwest Side withstand it now? There's going to be fights everywhere. The people who are going to make the money out of this at this phase are the election lawyers. And I'm talking to one. I should have a good story pretty soon. Stay tuned. It's about the 13th Ward and a young guy and petition challenges. And an odd thing. I thought it was called renunciation, but it's really revocation. Yeah, well, I'm not going to give that away free. This is the Chicago way. I mean, I've got to make a living too. Just remember this. The animosity between the Daleys and the Joyces is building. Either that or it could be like a complete fake. You know, Joyce and Daley fighting to draw attention to them and draw news to them. And what they don't want, what none of them want, is for Paul Vallis to come out and get in the runoff. If Vallis gets in the runoff, he's going to win. And that would upset all of them, every one of them. It would upset Preckwinkle and the SEIU that runs her campaign. It would upset Mendoza and Rahm and Madigan and Burke, who are part of her effort. Upset the Daleys. I don't know if it would upset Willie Wilson, though. I think Willie Wilson's having fun. Remember this, Jamal. Don't let anybody tell you you've got to fix your pacifier, man. You got to fight back. Fire back. Either step up or step off the corner and the Chicago way. For Jeff Carlin, WGN Radio's Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis, and for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and, yeah, also a guy who's trying to find out how to make the best Christmas ham. I've got a lot of ham pressure on me now. Serious ham pressure. Please join us again for another edition of the Chicago Way when we talk to Bill Daley about Jeremiah Joyce Jr. and what the heck's going on with that family. See you next time.